We're joined today by Bill Mauch, Vice President of R&D with AspenTech. Bill has been with AspenTech since 1984 and has held several positions with the company, including leadership roles in customer support, technical sales, marketing, and product management. Bill also holds several degrees in chemical engineering from the Massachusetts Institute of Technology. Good afternoon, Bill.
Good afternoon.
Okay, we're going to jump right into our interview today. We've got several exciting things to talk to Bill about on the 30th anniversary of AspenTech. So, Bill, let's start right at the beginning. Who or what was the main influence for you becoming a software engineer?
Well, back in the mid-70s, computer-aided chemical engineering was still a fairly new discipline, and applying computers to solve chemical engineering problems was a new and exciting field. You know, if you remember, back in those days, engineers were still using slide rules and charts. So when the Aspen project started at MIT with the focus on computer-aided chemical engineering, it was a great opportunity for someone like me who was really interested in this technology to become part of this new field.
Initially, what were some of your key objectives in your first role with AspenTech?
I was first hired into the customer support and training area. In the early days, the main focus was really on product development. So I was able to help shift the company's focus from just product development towards a stronger emphasis on our customers by providing high-quality support and making sure that they're able to use our products effectively. So in the beginning, I was involved in developing the first training materials, and I delivered dozens of training courses to our early customers. I also played a role in establishing a dedicated and professional customer support organization within the company. In the beginning days, we used to pass the telephone around the development team in order to answer customer questions. But by the time I had moved in, the organization had grown to comprise 20 or so support engineers across the world. So the other area that I was able to help at the beginning of AspenTech was to establish some technical sales teams and field support offices in Europe, Japan, Houston, and other parts of the world.
Okay, great. Bill, how would you describe the AspenTech culture back in the 1980s? For example, business, size, et cetera.
AspenTech was probably what you would consider a typical 80s startup. We were housed in a small warehouse space next to the railroad tracks. We had a couple of offices up front, some cubicles in the back, and a large open storage area containing one very loud space heater. But what we did have was some of the brightest people in the world, people like Larry Evans, Joe Boston, and Herb Britt, who were really prime thinkers in terms of computer-aided chemical engineering. Together with a group of pretty young and experienced MIT grads, these folks made up AspenTech. And when AspenTech launched, we had about 8 employees in total. By the mid-80s, this had grown to several dozen. In those early startup days, it was typical for people to work nights and weekends in an effort to build up the company. Survival and growth was really the main focus of our lives in the early days.
And Bill, what were some of the technical challenges you faced in the early days in comparison to what you're facing today?
Well, when we first started, computing power was one of the main limitations. Initially, we had to run over to MIT about a quarter of a mile down the road whenever we wanted to run one of our simulation programs. That was a pretty big limitation. After a couple of years, when we first got our first computer, which was a VAX, it had some pretty limited computing power, and people had to take turns working. Our main competition when we started the company was from in-house simulators. In those days, most of the major chemical and refining companies had their own simulators, and they had some fairly substantial internal groups that were developing and maintaining these systems. So what we really needed to do in the beginning was to show why we, as a commercial software company that was just starting out, were better at solving problems than their in-house teams. And again, as a startup, there was always the perennial issue of having cash at hand. We ran a pretty lean operation.
So, Bill, how has the profession of chemical engineering or engineering writing software for chemical engineers changed over the years?
Well, in the early days, most of the major companies, as I said, had their own simulators, and the use of simulation was limited to relatively few expert users. The emphasis was on technical capability, being able to solve the most difficult engineering problems. Now, largely because of AspenTech, most of these companies had moved from in-house simulators to adopting commercial simulators by the mid-1990s. And with the advent of PCs and graphical interfaces, the use of simulation tools became much more democratized. So the challenge has changed. It's moved from technical capability and a few experts solving tough problems to ease of use. So how to give more engineers easy access to technology to help them solve their everyday problems. So, you know, while maintaining our technical capability, there's been more emphasis on workflow integration, ease of use, and user experience in the recent years.
So what type of customer projects were you working on back in the early days, and would it be possible to share some anecdotes about that time?
Well, I remember when we first broke into the Japanese market in the mid-1980s. We worked together with one of our first Japanese employees, Hiro Suzuki, on our approach to Japanese prospects. Their greatest need at the time was to have a tool that could model their most difficult processes. So Hiro Suzuki would meet with prospects during the day, and they would send us their problems at the end of the day. So we would find solutions during our daytime here and turn those around by the morning of the next day. So from the Japanese company's point of view, it felt like they would give us their most difficult problems, go home, and the next day, magically, AspenTech had solved them. We worked this way over a period of a couple of years, after which we were able to build up the Japanese operation, and we could hire some local technical staff. But I think this illustrates that it was not only the scope of the technical capability we had, but also the customer focus and support that helped build the Japanese market in those early years. And that's a philosophy that we've used in building other markets around the world as well. So during that time, we were opening up offices across the world and recruiting and staffing those offices with technical people. That really was the key to our success in terms of expanding beyond the U.S. market, and that was a pretty exciting time. Some of our early offices really reflected, as I mentioned before, our shoestring budget. The first European office was located over a bowling alley. Our first Houston office was the second bedroom of the tech salesperson. But going global and at the same time being local was a very important step in terms of AspenTech growing and developing to the company that it is today.
Bill, in your view, what are some of the key landmark achievements of AspenTech over the past 30 years, specifically in terms of R&D and product development?
So I think that the initial achievements of AspenTech primarily revolved around our technical capabilities. As I said, very early on, we were able to tackle and solve some problems that no one else could solve in the marketplace. These had to do with being able to model some very non-ideal chemical systems and non-ideal thermodynamics. For example, three-phase distillation, electrolytes, polymers, and solids modeling. Our technical capability was a key to distinguishing AspenTech from our competition at the time and really establishing us as the company that could solve the problems that no one else could solve. But once we start moving into the mid-1980s and early 1990s with the development of PC versions, that really unleashed our technology and tools to the marketplace in a way that freed us from the mainframe. So this mobility that was associated with being able to run solutions on PCs really revolutionized the way that our customers used our products. In the mid-1990s, development of the first graphical user interfaces opened up the use of our tools to a much larger market. It really reduced the barriers and enhanced ease of use and increased the sheer number of people that could use our technology. So another landmark achievement of AspenTech was acquiring and integrating some of the best companies and technologies in adjacent areas, such as costing, equipment design, and plant automation and manufacturing solutions. So this helped AspenTech to take its capabilities beyond the core simulation market and cover a larger aspect of the engineering workflow, moving in particular to plant operations and supply chain management.
And Bill, how has the approach to AspenTech product development changed over the past 30 years? For example, planning, priorities, budget, customer focus?
I think our product development over the years has evolved to become a more disciplined and professional process. And moving from a startup type of environment over the past three decades, we've evolved to a situation where we have a dedicated product management group that helps us to gather and filter and prioritize customer and market requirements so that we can make sure that we develop what the market needs. And we've also adopted rigorous project management techniques and processes that have helped us to deliver our products on spec and on time. And one of the things that has really changed over the past 3 years is our emphasis on quality. We have much improved quality processes that result in a better overall experience for our customers when they receive our products.
And Bill, in your opinion, which key solutions offerings have risen markedly in performance over the past 3 decades?
So over the last 3 years, we've seen that the initial focus was on simulation and solving core simulation problems. But that's evolved to cover adjacent workflows that encompass more of the process engineering activities. So conceptual design is where simulation is primarily used, but through the acquisitions I've mentioned and through focusing on engineering workflows, we've been able to provide solutions that go beyond conceptual engineering into the areas of equipment design, basic engineering, and into plant operations and manufacturing support. So over the past 3 decades, AspenTech's focus has really changed from emphasizing point products focusing on specific parts of the workflow to providing a more integrated solution that's able to manage and handle the entire engineering supply chain.
And Bill, just to switch gears a little bit here and ask you about engineering itself, from the perspective of someone who's been in the engineering field for more than 3 decades, why do you believe there's a skill shortage in the engineering software industry currently?
Okay, well, this is one of my pet peeves. Over the last couple of decades, I think we've seen the emphasis in universities in chemical engineering has really moved from what we would call traditional chemical engineering, focusing on fundamental areas like unit operations, reaction kinetics, heat transfer, and thermo, to some more fashionable or trendy fields like biological processes, materials engineering, and nanomaterials. And now, you know, those are areas that I think are worthwhile, obviously, to do research in, but as a result, you know, there are fewer and fewer chemical engineering departments that focus on the fundamentals. And this does negatively impact the number of people graduating with the types of background skills and, as I said, the chemistry fundamentals that are required to support the types of technologies and work that we focus on.
Given that, Bill, how do you see the future of software engineering in the process industries?
Well, the future of software engineering in the process industries, I think, is very much tied in with what's happening outside the process industries, especially in terms of broader IT trends. In the last decade in particular, we've seen some pretty significant advancements in terms of the internet and mobile applications. The smartphone that I carry in my pocket probably has, you know, many times the power of that first PC that we had when AspenTech started. So the equivalent computing power is now pretty far surpassed by, as I said, your smartphone. You know, the ability of tools to run in the cloud and a range of other IT advancements is really going to impact software engineering for the process industries going forward. The ability of people to access data and technologies that were in the past either unavailable to them or very difficult to get, that's really going to greatly magnify the impact the engineers can have on their organizations. So, for example, we're probably going to be focusing a lot of our future development in making data and models available to our customers through the web, through the cloud. And, you know, we envision having the full power of tools available to our customers anytime, any place, through mobile applications. So I think the sheer computing power that's now on tap and that is going to come is going to allow engineers to visualize, analyze, and solve problems, and also bring engineers to work together in a way that's not been possible before. I think these are really very exciting developments.
Great. Well, Bill, thank you for your time today and sharing some of your experiences with AspenTech over the past 30 years.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
Right, and please stay tuned for more developments and more information coming out of AspenTech this year as we celebrate AspenTech's 30 years providing solutions to the process industries.